I was coming from Montgomery. I had my guitar on my back. When this stranger stopped beside me in an antique Cadillac. He was dressed like 1950, half drunk and hollow-eyed. Say it's a long walk to Nashville, would you like to ride? I sat down in the front seat, turned on the radio. Them sad old songs coming out of them speakers was solid country gold. Then I noticed the stranger was ghost white pale when I asked him for a light. I knew there was something strange about this ride. He said, "Drifter, can you make folks cry when you're playing sign? Have you paid your dues? Can you moan the blues? Can you bend them guitar strings? Boy, can you make folks feel what you feel inside? If you're big star bound, let me warn you, it's a long, hard ride."
Hello and welcome to Doc Young's Wrestling Weekly. My name is Victor Sosa, joined, as always, by the legend Les Thatcher. And today, a very special day here at Doc Young's Wrestling Weekly because we're constantly dropping the name of, well, Doc Young. So it's only fitting that the esteemed leader of this fine radio program dropped by today for some pearls of wisdom, Les. I hope you've got your notebook out.
I do.
Oh, you're going to get words, but there's not much wisdom to them.
I think the thing he's going to tell us today, Big, he's been moved to the psych ward. because his the object of his affections for the last couple of years is marrying CM Punk.
I got a bone to pick with that man. Every time I fall in love, CM Punk comes along. Remember Maria? CM Punk. AJ? CM Punk. CM Punk, if you're listening, I challenge you to a fencing duel.
Whoa.
Whoa.
Yes.
I will
right
say this.
Here.
I will say this for my friend Philip. He has been a player, and apparently AJ's taken him off the market. At least I hope that's the deal since they're getting married. But, yeah, I know. I used to tease him and say, "Really? A new one already?" I mean,
oh.
You know, he's it almost makes me want to be skinny. You know, there's got to be something to that. I don't know. Hell, there's all sorts of ladies out there. And, you know, you
there
go back
is,
to Chrissy Hemme, can't you? You go back to Chrissy Hemme.
No. Once I leave them, they're gone. Chrissy's still married. But in April, I put a post on my Facebook and declared my true and undying affection for Paige. This is to the end, folks.
He changes his hot button like you and I change clothes. He just the ever popular stud muffin Doc Young. What else you got on your mind, Doctor?
Oh, my God. I just wanted to tell you guys about some really cool stuff that's going down. It's got a little to do with wrestling, so, you know.
Well, let's hope so.
Yeah, because, you know, I'm trying to keep with the theme here, but coming out in August is a new super cool. It's sort of a horror slash comedy movie. It's called Jersey Shore Massacre. And it's basically, what the title sounds like. You know,
a bad indie show on the Jersey Shore.
It is a, basically a slasher pick, with, young Jersey kids, and one of the stars is Romeo Rosselli from WWE, our good friend of the show. He is playing one of the lead roles. He is playing Tony.
I thought he was probably playing Doc Young, the hot star.
No. I am the I'm a consulting producer of the show, of the movie.
All right.
We've got, I think the trailer's up on the, video, or on the message board. in vintage section. And Romeo, the movie's coming out.
I keep interrupting. Romeo also is former tag team partner of another friend of the show.
Yes.
Antonio Thomas.
Right. Yes. Good man. Okay. Good man. The movie's coming out August 22nd in selected theaters and will be available on video on demand August 26th. So get your cable remote buttons ready. Check that movie out. It's going to be a good one. Also, in pre-production right now is a movie called The House of Evil. Now, this is goes back to the homage to the 80s gore flicks. It's going to be a little more serious. I'm co-executive producer of this movie. We are going to start filming, I believe, in 2 months. It's going to be out next year on Netflix, Hulu, Walmart, and I believe Video on Demand.
And porn theaters near you?
No. But rumored for cameos, to going to depend on his schedule. Al Snow is in talks about being in
so
a cameo in this movie.
It's
No. Totally serious movie. And right now we are wrapping up a third movie. It's called Helltown. I'm the consulting producer on this flick. There are no wrestlers in it. It has nothing to do with wrestling, but it's sort of a soap opera meets horror film.
Oh, it's DNA.
No. No, that's Jersey Shore Massacre's DNA. But, this Helltown movie, it's going to be like no kind of movie you've ever seen before. It's going to become something completely different. You guys want to touch that? Going to have more details on that stuff when it comes out.
Let me ask you a question. At next year's Academy Awards, am I going to see you on the red carpet with Steven Spielberg? Now that you've sort of, you know, moving away from wrestling into major movie production, or possibly getting into WWF films or something.
I'm going to go ahead and say no right there.
Well, okay.
No, but you know, these are independent flicks.
Right.
You know, they're not, you can't go to your theater and, well, except for the Jersey Shore movie. You're not going to go to your local theater and watch them. They're independent flicks, but decent movies, good movies. And, you know, I hope you all check them out when they come
How'd you get involved with all this? I mean.
Oh, good Lord. You know, Romeo, Rosselli actually got me involved he turned me on to the director of the Jersey Shore flick. And from there I became buddies with the PR guy who was working on some other flicks, and you know, I just kind of branched out from there.
Gotcha.
So yeah, I've been busy, even though I'm still, you know, basically in bed. You know,
kind of like the mafia boss that runs his crew from prison. You're running the movie industry from the rehab center, right? It's cool.
Yeah, I'm at the long-term treatment center right now on my cell phone. We don't get our own phones, like, you know, at a hospital, you get a phone right next to you. We don't even get that here.
Really?
But it's cool. I got my own TV.
That's, you know, that's something that I just, you know, with a wife, when they took the prosthesis out of her knee, of course, in the hospital here, they had the in-room phone. But at the rehab center, the nursing home, whatever you want to call it, they don't. So she's got to use her cell phone there, too.
Yeah. Right, right.
Yeah.
So it's, that's not cool. But, you know, there's a lot of good stuff. We got, me and my roommate, we have a huge room, good big closet, our own bathroom. It's pretty cool. I don't know if you can hear that nurse. She's talking really loud, but, yeah, it's pretty cool.
She's sending you back to your cell. I can hear what she's saying. All the prisoners back in their cells.
I'm going to be here at least another month, and then I should be good to go home.
Is the weight starting to go back up a little bit?
Yeah, it had gone up, and then I had a really bad month in May. I had double pneumonia, blood poisoning, and like three bleeding ulcers. I guess they went down there from 10 ulcers all of a sudden, popped up out of nowhere. So I ended up losing a bunch of the weight. And then, like, this last week, I just gained, like, 5 pounds for no reason. I don't know. It's weird. But, yeah, it's going up.
Let me ask you a question. And for those who think, for those who think they have things tough, over the past 5 years, how many times have you had pneumonia with all your other because of all your other complications? Do you have any idea? What,
11
times, 30 times, 35 times?
11 times.
11 times.
Yes.
Okay.
11 pneumonias.
Wow, that's doctor.
That's just pneumonia.
You know I pick on you because I love you, but
yeah.
You pound. All 120 pounds of you, you're a tough SOB. You really are. I mean, you know, you're hanging in there. You're fighting this thing. Oh, it's going on 6 years now, isn't it?
Actually, no.
No.
Well, yeah, 6 years. Wow.
Yeah.
It really didn't seem like that.
Time flies when you're having fun.
Really wasn't bad.
For those who are listening and don't know what we're talking about here, Doc and I did a weekly show, and 6 years ago he said, I've got a cold or something here, and we're going to have to take, you know, my voice is bothering me. We're going to have to take a few weeks off. And here we are 6 years later. And,
yeah.
And you've been battling, I mean, this whole thing, but I mean, the overall problem creates, you know, a multitude of different things, right? Like we're talking about 11 times pneumonia, but then you have bleeding ulcers and,
the whole thing is whatever I got back then, whether it was a flu virus or something, my immune system attacked my nervous system. Which made my body go haywire.
And this is something a lot of young guys should realize when you get horny and chase after wrestling divas, that these are the side effects of that. And so you got to be careful. Right.
From 08 to 2011, it wasn't all that bad. It was just mainly my voice.
Yeah.
And then in 2011, everything really went downhill.
But the thing of it is, what people need to know too is from whether it's a rehab center, or a hospital, or home, you've been bedridden quite a bit of the time, but you're still producing shows for Brian, and now you're working in the movie business. You're aggravating the hell out of me. So I mean, it keeps you busy, right?
I will always have time to aggravate the hell out of you, us.
I know. That's what you live for. I know.
No matter where I have to do it from, I'll be able to do it.
Aggravating less is a very important part of his rehab, you understand?
Yes,
that's right. It's good mentally.
A lot of people on the message board have picked up on that, Doc, and they also are rehabbing by aggravating.
I told you to stay off there.
I don't get on there. I just have a friend that Well, actually, we haven't had any cut and paste in a while, which is, I guess, I've said the right things or haven't said anything at all. I'm not sure which. But anyway.
Whoever that is, I'm going to find whoever that is. I'm going to get that guy.
Oh, you're a feisty devil. So, you get to go home in a month?
Yep.
Good.
That's my plan. But hey, I've taken up enough of this time with this non-wrestling Doc Young bull crap.
Buy all these movies, those you're listening, so Doc Young can become a multimillionaire and,
yes,
and,
right.
And bail Vic and I out of our financial
woes. Yeah, please.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
Doc, before you take off, please, this show is obviously being heard by a lot more listeners than normal, and that's because today's show is a free show. And since you swung this deal, I would love for you to just go ahead and let everybody know what the deal is with that before you take off.
Oh, you guys, you got to sign up for the Wrestling Observer. You get this wonderful show, and you get, a whole ton of podcasts, the latest news, and any news site you go to for your wrestling news, guess where they got their news from? They got it from this website. So why not get your news straight from the horse's mouth? Get a subscription to the Wrestling Observer. You get all this stuff. Only $10.99 a month. So check it out. Go to WrestlingObserver.com or you can go to Figure4Online.com. It's up to you. It's the same damn place. So check it out, guys. I'm going to let you two get back talking wrestling and do what you do best. I'm going to go do what I do best and take a nap.
Doctor, you know I love you, buddy. Good talking to you. Take care of yourself, okay?
I love you guys too, Paige. Mwah, mwah. I'm gonna see you on Raw, baby.
Be well, Doc. Thank you, brother.
Take it easy.
That, of course, a drive-by, if you will, from the esteemed Doc Young, who is not only the head booker, if you will, for this fine website. He gets all the guests that you hear on Figure Four Daily with Brian Alvarez. And also, of course, has his name on this show because he is the originator of this show with the great Les Thatcher as well. And as he mentioned, you are listening to this show free today, perhaps, because it is one of the free shows that is available at WrestlingObserver.com/Figure4Online.com. Doc swung the deal with Brian for us to have Les a show available to all freeloaders at least once a month, and this will be the free show for June. So
Let's
impress them with your wrestling knowledge today.
Or lack thereof, whichever.
Or lack thereof, yeah.
Okay. Let's start with last weekend up in East Tennessee. Let me cover that if you don't mind.
Sure.
I just, you know, and we, excuse me, as we were plugging that, I mentioned, you know, I never had a chance to do a camp up there and had a real good time. All the young men had turned out, worked their butts off, had some real good kids. I legitimately saw improvement with them over the 2 days that we spent in ring. First, I want to thank Tony Gibbons and Joe at Evolution Sports Gym in Elizabethan for their hospitality. This gym, you would love this, Vic, honestly. Joe has just opened up. He's been there about a month, and it's 32,000 square feet, and man, it has everything. Joe himself has been a powerlifter. He's got a little pro wrestling background. He's in his 40s. Anyway, they do, you know, powerlifting, fitness, MMA. They have an octagon, MMA training, personal training, CrossFit, speed conditioning, boot camps, and more. They've got, you know, obviously the wrestling ring in there where NWA Smoky Mountain trains their people. If you live in that area, this is, you know, obviously location and convenience for working out at gyms all the time is obviously important. If you are any place near here, you want to go in and check it out. They've got they've got normal, you know, free weights. They've got a section in the middle. He's going to start running amateur boxing tournaments. He's going to run MMA in there. They're at one point they are going to put NWA Smoky Mountain in there. As far as shows, they've got an AstroTurf Center where you can pull the weighted sled, flip the tire, you know, stuff like that. They've got punching bags of all sizes, weights, shapes, and forms, you know, a lot of cardio equipment. They're installing a pro shop. They have a restaurant. They've got some new equipment, which is, I guess, it's got the Andre Agassi name on it, but it's selector stack, but it's hard to describe, but it's unique. I got to play it around with a little bit of it, and it's an amazing place. I told them, I said, I'd love to live near there, you know, and be able to, you know, obviously work with the wrestlers to train in there, but just, it's just a great place to work out. That's Evolution Sports Gym, in Elizabethan, Tennessee at Smoky Mountain Place. And, Joe is the owner. And again, you know, I want to thank Joe for his hospitality and the promoter, Tony Gibbons of, NWA Smoky, for his as well. You know, I go to indie shows, Vic, and I have learned not to have any expectations. You know, just see the card, let the cards fall where they may. This is one of the better indie shows I'd seen in a while because it featured professional wrestling more. I mean, there were a couple dives and stuff, but, you know, overall, it was a good solid wrestling show. They were in Kingsport, on Saturday night. And so they have a half hour TV show, which airs in the area. And I got to set in with Matt Rose, who is their play-by-play guy, and did a little color on that. And you know, it was a good show. It had some good talent, a mixture of different things, some couple good angles, and so it was really a pleasant weekend. And Tony and I have talked. We're figuring on me going back maybe in about in the early fall, somewhere within the next 5 or 6 months. So it was a lot of fun. And so if you're up that way, check out NWA Smoky Mountain and also the Evolution Sports Gym.
Now, for those of you who are checking this out for the first time, maybe not familiar with the name Les Thatcher, as he just talked about, running weekend wrestling camps here, there, and everywhere. Les has been, what, we're coming up on your anniversary in about a month or so, aren't we, Les?
Yeah, July the 4th will be my anniversary, 54 years in the professional wrestling business. At virtually every level and doing almost everything except getting rich. I'm still working at that and haven't accomplished it. Yeah, July the 4th, 1960, Blue Hills, Maine, was my very first wrestling match at the age of 19. And been in the business in some capacity or another ever since. So it's been a while, hasn't it?
Just a little bit, but that's... That's part of the fun of being able to talk to you, and I do consider it a real honor and privilege every week because you've done everything there is to do. You've wrestled, you've booked, you've promoted, you've run your own developmental group for WWE. You go out and you've had your own school. You go out and visit these different organizations or different camps on a week every so often and share your knowledge on a regular basis with the young up-and-coming folks who are looking to make their mark in the world of professional wrestling / sports entertainment. And that is why, after getting a chance to see some interesting stuff on the indie level this weekend that impressed you and surprised you because it's better than you've grown accustomed to seeing over the last couple of years, there's a couple of things, and I don't know that these two, well, I'll see how we can tie these together, because I think we saw something that was not bad by any stretch of the imagination, I don't think, because... Well, one of the things you like to say is that the element of surprise is a booker's best friend. And we certainly saw a surprise on Monday Night Raw. And the reason I'm trying to make the correlation here between training and what have you is because we also saw some stuff from another accomplished trainer this week that you and I both had a chance to view from the hustler himself, Mr. Rip Rogers, talking about some basics and some things people need to keep in mind on their way up. And... You know, playing into the idea of basics, things you need to keep in mind when you're putting things together. The idea of surprise being great, I mean, I think everyone will agree that we were certainly surprised Seth Rollins was the guy who turned in the Shield. Lots of folks were expecting probably Dean Ambrose. There were perhaps a few I's dotted or T's not crossed that could have made this thing even more interesting.
Yeah. Well, you know, as my one of my dear friends, and brilliant minds in the wrestling business, Jim Cornette, always says, it's all in the details. And yes, on this show, I do split hairs, and that's the way I was brought up in this business, because you try to do away with any type of objections that when you set up to do an angle or a storyline or in this case, the switch. And, it was a surprise. It was the best 5 or 10 minutes of the entire show because the rest of the show was just kind of there. We could pick that apart, but we probably got other things we'd rather talk about. My only problem with the Seth Rollins turn was the fact that the night before, he risked life and limb to win for the Shield, helped beat the hell out of three guys in Evolution, which, if this whole sneaky double agent thing was going to transpire on Monday, should not have happened. And when I say that, it just didn't make a lot of sense. Vic, you and I are going to pull a swerve on Doc Young, and I'm going to turn and be on his side, but I'm going to beat the hell out of him before I turn and be on his side. That makes no sense. There is no logic to that and no common sense. What would I have done? Okay. Really simple. with six guys, it's easy to cover the fact that, changes in temperatures and climates and weather stuff has got my sinuses up. It would have been simple enough with, like I say, the other five guys to blow enough, to throw up enough smokescreen that something, and I'm just grabbing here at examples, Randy Orton throws a big forearm at Seth Rollins and he goes down by the dasher boards and stays there. He's out of the mix. But then the other five guys are carrying it on enough that it's not all that noticeable. I mean, he still gets into this thing, but when he gets into it, he puts on wrestling holds. He would have never have dived off the Titantron or whatever the hell you want to call it. That would have been a no-no, period. Because it doesn't make sense that you're going to risk your life and limb for Shield when 24 hours later you're going to be on the other side. The smart double agents in the James Bond thrillers and stuff like that, don't do those things. So that was my only complaint. But the little things like him staying out of the mix as much as possible, forearms or dropped, this or that. And then this week, this coming Monday, they go out there and they put up little pieces of the tape from the pay-per-view, and they show, in reviewing the six-man from the pay-per-view, look at what we found. But Shield, the other two members of the Shield, it was so subtly done that they weren't aware. But obviously Seth Rollins was preparing himself to go to the other side. And that's my only, otherwise it was a shock. And I think a good shock because, yes, everyone kind of figured Ambrose because, he's a little left of center and sometimes out of control. But I think it was good to go with the other guy, because again, it did shock or surprise people, and it elicited the type of response that they were looking for. So good. Now it comes down to where do we go with this, and are we going to actually make it work? They tried very hard to get some of Daniel Bryan's heat on, love, I guess you more say, was Cena by him going out there and playing Big Brother, which did more, I think, to dilute Daniel Bryan's position than it did to help because, Stephanie made a point, John, they don't like you much better than they like me. And they're right. So, but, overall, other than the blow off at the end, and there again is when, we've talked about this again. Wow, look at the big numbers on the overrun. A lot of people figure out that's where everything's going to happen that's meaningful. So that's all I got to watch. But that was the show itself. It was there. It wasn't a bad show. It wasn't a good show. It was just a show. And, but that blow off at the end and the switch with Seth Rollins, was meaningful, a surprise. It was well done. And, now I'm anxious to see where they go with it.
An interesting turn for those of you who do like the behind the scenes stuff in that it seemed like they were doing the whole Daniel Bryan thing for the last few weeks, doing their best to kick the can down the road, so to speak, try and give Daniel as much time as possible to heal. And all of a sudden, it seemed kind of like an about face on Raw, where it was announced that either Daniel Bryan will defend the title and Money in the Bank at the end of this month, or he will be stripped, which sounded like something they were looking to avoid at all costs, which, according to this week's issue of the Wrestling Observer, with Dave Meltzer, of course, who does a wonderful job reporting on these things, it's up on the front page of the website right now if you're a subscriber, he mentioned that some news has been received in WWE land that was not all that positive as it relates to Daniel Bryan's rehab from this recent neck procedure he had. In fact, Dave goes so far as to say he's heard that Daniel Bryan, since rehab has begun, has actually lost some strength in his right arm as opposed to gaining it, which is concerning. So Mr. Bryan's headed back to Pittsburgh to see Dr. Maroon, who performed the surgery, and see if they can get a handle on what exactly is going on here. But Les, when you hear stuff like that, first of all, it's concerning from a personal level. That's a whole different thing. But the idea now that they understand that rehab is not going well, and rather than continue to find ways to prolong this period of Daniel Bryan as champion without actually defending it, they've sort of drawn a line in the sand now and said something's going to happen at Money in the Bank, whether he's the champ or not. Well, to me, I read it as, and it's not necessarily what it is, but my first thought, because, you know, I don't know, maybe it's just me, was, gosh, I wonder, are they trying to get this guy to come back here before he's ready? And if so, why would you do that?
It's not unheard of in this business. You know, it's been going on since the 54 years I've been in. Don't get me wrong, it's not every promoter asking every guy gets hurt. A lot of it depends on, the situation and how severe the injury. But with this, if they are pushing him to come back too early, that's wrong. The guy, you know, here's the deal. The guy's risk his ass for you. Then you need to respect that and take care of him and see that he's not coming back too quickly. We had talked about what could be done, for him to hold the belt until he can come back. But now this throws a little different light on it too. You realize one of the reasons Arn Anderson was out, had to end his career abruptly, was due to nerve damage in his arm, and he was unable to use the one arm. I mean, he used it, but unable to use it in any effective way as a professional wrestler. And that's what's kind of scary to me here too, is that in some way, shape, or form, the neck injury has created a tendon problem or ligaments or nerve damage to that arm. And if so, it could effectively put an end to his career. So then I can understand why they may have to do this, to pull the belt off him. Otherwise, I had suggested, as because WWE rewrites history every week, changes, you're not supposed to remember what they did at 9 o'clock, so they can do something totally in reverse of that at 10 o'clock. Was that, when they start some kind of legal procedure to take the belt from him, and he comes back with a lawyer and says, hey, precedents have been established, so-and-so did this and so-and-so did that, and, this happened to so-and-so in this year, and this happened to so-and-so in that year, and you did not ask them to relinquish the belt, nor did you strip them of the title. And Stephanie, in the year 19 whatever and whatever, and again, you're going to make it up as you go, Triple H was the Intercontinental Champion, or the United States, or whatever, and he was injured and was out for X number of weeks, and no one messed with him. So with that in mind, my lawyer and I are walking out, and we'll see you when I'm healthy, and I'll be happy to put the title on the line. Which gives him time to rehab. It gives them time to steam, and get mad and get upset and all that sort of thing. But first of all, in terms of if he is able to come back, the fact that they want him to come back with Glenn, with Kane, Glenn has been a hell of a journeyman. I mean, he you know, he's done anything and everything that this company has wanted. He has worked his ass off for them. I like him as a person. You know, I've known him since he was Unabomber in Smoky Mountain. He's a good guy. He's a good businessman. He's a loyal employee. This is to be Daniel Bryan's first guy back. Why don't we have Cena beat the hell out of him? Okay. That to me is, again, they do more to diminish the value of Daniel Bryan than they do to enhance it. I don't know their motives. Is it because they don't personally like him? Is it because they think because he's not 7 feet tall or 6'5" and looks like a Greek god that he's, you know, his value is minimal? I don't know. It's just, you know, that whole thing with, Stephanie and Cena didn't do a lot for him, quite honestly. And then I heard, now somebody told me that his wife, threw a little fit because after the surgery, they flew him home coach.
Oh, is that right? I didn't know that.
Well, now whether it's true or not, I don't know either, but that's what I was told. You know what? I don't blame her. I mean, here again, you know, it's, I go to war for you people. I put my life on the line, my health on the line, for you people. And so now I am injured because of that. Would you be okay if you can take care of me? Now, you know, it's such a double-edged sword. You know, they put out the thing about, helping, former employees with, financial problems and the guidance, and I think that's commendable. It is, you know, I think, you know, because it happens a lot. You know, and the NFL does that with young players. They have older players who have had some of these problems that are now solvent, you know, come in and, you know, preach the pitfalls of, you know, overspending on your, you know, your big bonus signs and stuff like that. But, and the pitfalls of being a celebrity and having a few bucks and people trying to, you know, wrestle some of it away from you. But then on the other hand, here's a guy who has made you some of that money, a fair percentage over the last 6 or 7 months, and you put him coach. Wouldn't it be more comfortable? Wouldn't it be really nice if he were in first class where he's not possibly crowded between people? And, you know, believe me, I fly coach because I am not Daniel Bryan or Triple H or Stephanie or anybody else. But, and I'm not a giant, but I try to get an aisle seat because getting stuffed between two people, you never, you know, it's just, it's uncomfortable. You know, it's, you know, and here's a guy who just coming off surgery and they would do something. I think it's bad. It's bad business. And it sends a negative message out to the rest of your employees as well, I think.
I've always heard and read and seen in other places, too, that typically in travel, whoever the WWE champion is, as long as you're the champion, you fly first class.
You know what? I don't know if that's I couldn't give you a yay or nay on that. I don't know if that's true or not. Of course, Cena's got a bus and Triple H got a bus and, you know, all I had was Pontiac Bonneville, so I can't say. Anyway, yeah. So you know, it's but especially because of the injury and because of the surgery, I think it would have been very nice. You know, or you know what would have been really cool is to send a company plane to take him home.
That would have been nice.
You know, it would have been a great show of respect and caring for a guy who has busted his ass for you. You know, but. Whatever, we'll see. I just hope he doesn't. That's that whole macho, the show must go on, and if you want to show that you really got a set, you know, you're going to come back and fight through this and fight through that. And, you know, it sounds good, but the point is all the money in the world can't buy you a new body. And if you are disabled in a wheelchair, this, that, or the other thing at a young age. I'm blessed to be able to play with my grandchildren, you know, because I try to take care of myself, and in part because I was lucky. You know, I had my share of injuries, but But then I look at my friend Harley Race, who is 3 years younger than me, who has had, I think, 6 back surgeries at this point, and he uses a walker. He rides around with the electric carts. He can walk, but, I mean, he doesn't take hikes. He doesn't, you know, it's painful. And he will, you know, the crazy thing there is Harley will tell you the one thing that he wished he had never done in his career was the flying headbutt, which in essence, I guess, from what everyone talks and from what we can discern, is the reason that Daniel had to have the neck surgery anyway. So, you know, it's, again, he put his health on the line for the company. At least the company could do is show their care and respect by, you know, flying in first class and not putting any pressure on. And I can say this honestly, Matt, when I was with the company, when Jim Ross was in the driver's seat as head of talent relations, it was neither one of us could feel a thing from guys who were out, right? Now, if I thought somebody was just, you know, slacking, that was a different thing. But my stance was always this, Vic, I can't feel anything. You tell me when you're ready to go. And that's, you know, that's, or in this case, the doctor. You know,
Les, we talked about the hustler Rip Rogers a little while ago because he sent out some very interesting tweets that I think, well, first of all, the knowledge is free and it's on Twitter and you don't have to pay any money to go check out Twitter and follow Rip at Hustler2754. But he dropped a little, great deal of knowledge this week on just the basics of working a match. So for anyone who has just been a longtime fan and interested in how things should work or be done the right way, so to speak, Larry Brown, famous basketball coach, is famous for. His pet quote is, play the game the right way. And if you're looking how to play the game the right way, the Hustlers shared a lot of knowledge on Twitter this week. And if you're an independent wrestler who's looking to up your game, you could definitely learn from some of the tweets that the Hustler had this week. And I know that you were very interested in when you read them, Les, and wanted to make mention of them on the show this week.
Yeah, well, you know, Rip and I are on the – I made a joke. We're on the same page, believe me, you know, in terms of how to train. And now he talks nastier than I do and yells louder than I do, so he kind of makes me a baby face, so I look up to him for that. No, Rip is a talented performer himself, and he has been one of the trainers in Ohio Valley for a long time, and he knows his stuff, you know, I mean, he does. But, you know, I think that, you know, any of the serious trainers that actually are trying to put good fundamentals and a good foundation under a young athlete preparing for this business would, you know, go along with everything Rip said. Those would be guys like, you know, Bob Evans, Lance Storm, Dory Funk Jr., Harley Race, myself, Tom Pritchard. You know, we may all approach it in a little different manner because that's the creativity of our industry. But I think we all would agree. If you want to mention a couple of them, if we couldn't cover the whole thing, or we'd be here for 2 or 3 hours. But if you want to bring up a couple of them, we'll discuss them.
Well, one of the interesting things, first of all, when you go through his timeline, and I strongly suggest you do if you want to learn a little bit. Again, it's at Hustler2754. Is that he not only breaks down how you should be working a match as a babyface, but also as a heel. So you get both sides of the coin here if you're scrolling through Rip's timeline. But one of the things that I liked was, as he's talking about as a face how you should work a match, there should always be a basic hold you go back to, whether it's a headlock, an armbar, a leg lock, cravat, whatever. And the thing was, why it's important, if you're not in the match, don't be so caught up in doing in getting yourself, all your other stuff together for your match that you're not watching the other matches on the show. Because if the match before you uses a headlock as the base of their match, then don't go out there right after him and use a headlock as the base of your match. They just saw that.
Use an armbar, use a leg, use something else. Yeah. A quick story that fits into that from a young man who is no longer with us, who I loved and respected very much, who was a dear personal friend, Eddie Guerrero. Eddie, when he wasn't with the Fed at the time, was staying in Cincinnati and helping me train guys there and working out of Cincinnati. And this is back when they had just started Ring of Honor. And so neither one of us, you know, was aware of what Ring of Honor, and we knew it was supposed to be different, but, you know, neither one of us had ever seen it. So anyway, Gabe Sapolsky called Eddie and booked him on one of their shows. So Eddie came back to Cincy, and we got to talk about it. And I said, how did that Ring of Honor thing go? He said, you know, it was all right. He said, they had a monitor in the dressing room. They were filming everything. And he said, I sat there. I was on sixth match. By the fourth match, he said, I thought, well, I'll just get dressed, pack my bags, and go home, because anything I've ever done or ever considered doing has been done four or five times already. And the meaning of that is that that makes, you know, the more something is seen, the more something is done, the less effect it has, the less value it is. And Rip mentions that as well. And yes, that was one of the things that we were taught. One of the things I always try to teach the guys that came to me when I had physically had a school in Cincinnati is watch the matches before, you know, that are on before you. If you had planned to do something and it's been done already once or twice, then don't do it. You know, that's why this is a creative business. That's also why you need to learn for whatever, you know, no matter what else, is how to call a match in the ring, how to put a match together on the fly, to go in there with just a finish, knowing who's going to win and a rough out of, you know, the last couple minutes of how you're going into that finish, and build your story to that. Because seeing the same old over and over again, it loses its effectiveness. And that it's a very valid point. I was telling somebody over the weekend, this past weekend, it's like now, it's not, okay, we lock up, I take an arm bar, you reverse the arm bar, then I drop down, roll through, kip up, reverse, you know, I mean, it's like, okay, God, I've seen that, and I've seen it, and you may see it two or three times in the same show. It loses its effectiveness. We are supposed to be, if nothing else, creative people, innovative people in the professional wrestling business, and being able to, you know, create things on the fly. And so, yeah, watch what comes before you and don't duplicate it. That's the best advice.
And that's the part you hit upon exactly where I was going next, is because, you know, the implication there, although he doesn't actually say it, is that don't plot everything out before the show and then be determined to stick to it, because you may have two or three other people who are thinking on the same wavelength as you are, and they'll have done all your stuff by the time you get out there.
Yeah. Well, you know, and you never know too. You can lay all this stuff out, but if say you and I are working a match and I'm supposed to do a couple high flying moves, and I pull a hamstring, not bad enough that we have to go home and finish the match right there, but bad enough that I'm not going to be able to go to the top rope and do this or do these moves. Well, by God, we can't ask the folks watching, excuse us, time out. We need to go back to the locker room and rewrite this match or rethink it. You've got to change. You've got to shift gears right there. Plus, you know, you got to realize the illogical reasoning behind laying it all out in the dressing room. You're going out there, you are sitting in the dressing room laying out a match for people you don't know, people you've never seen before in your life. So how do you know they're going to like any or all of what you're doing? You don't. And that's why creating on the fly is, or learning to do that. Now, if you know, this is a business, so you do what you're paid to do. If WWE said, we want everything laid out in the back so these 19,000 cameramen that are so stupid they can't stay up with you will know where to be. Okay, then you do that, because that's what you're being paid to do. But then those guys may, even though you do that, something may happen out there, you're going to have to shift gears, regardless of the cameramen, regardless of what's going on in the grill position. So you're going to have to be able to create something. But the point is, you know, you don't know what the people are buying. You and I can have a big match in Chicago and just blow the roof off the building, right? We take that same match, move for move, a couple hundred miles down the road to Indianapolis, and the people sit on their hands and wouldn't care. So if that's all we have, if that's all we can do, then we're going to lose the crowd, we're going to be powerless, and we're going to lay an egg. And that's not, you know, your function. So yeah, you learn to be creative. Learn to call a match on the fly. I know for a fact that a lot of trainers, Harley's that way, I'm that way. Everybody's come out of my place. I don't know what they, you know, obviously I don't babysit them once they leave me. But BJ Whitmer, Nigel McGuinness, Shark Boy, any of those guys, God rest his soul, Lance Cade came to me and was fearful of going into the ring and trying to create on the fly. He just wasn't comfortable with it. He spent a year there and learned how to do it, and he understood the value of it. So, it's one of the tools you should have, no matter how frequent or how seldom you use it.
One other thing that jumped out at me before we move on is, as a heel, you learn to use a false finish that was successful earlier in the night to get a rise, which I read as something that actually won a match earlier in the card is something as a heel you should use because the people saw it earlier. This is where it's valuable to do something that the people saw earlier. They saw it, and when they saw it, it worked. So when they see you do it, they're thinking, oh, that's it. And when the babyface kicks out,
but don't overuse it. That's the other thing,
right,
too.
Mm-hmm.
Don't do 50,000 false finishes and have guys kicking out of everybody else's finish. And here's something too. If you are going to use something, if you're going to miss something, then you have to establish what that something is you're missing. I remember a number of years ago, I watched this guy. I saw him in two different matches, and it was on the Independence. And he'd leap up in the air and fall on the back of his head, and then he would take over. I said, I think I know what you're doing, but I don't think the audience understands. What do you mean? I said, well, you're supposed to be missing a drop kick. Yeah. Well, you need to connect one first. You establish what it is. You know, you have to establish how it works before you miss it. In other words, if a guy ducks every clothesline you throw, then at some point people are thinking, he keeps waving over his head. Is he anointing him? Is he knighting him? What the hell is he doing? you have to connect those clotheslines, and then when the guy sees his, when you telegraph it once, swap, and then the guy ducks under it. Okay, now as I say in all my training camps and seminars, two wrestlers in that ring are walking, talking, breathing book. And a book has a beginning and a middle and an end. And you are a storyteller. Do not tell the story at 100 miles an hour because I can't read it. You know, it's just like taking a good novel and turning the pages. Lance Storm and I are avid readers of Lee Child's Jack Reacher, and there's a couple other mysteries that he and I both catch up on. Now, if we just thumb through those books, he reads his on electronically, so he can't thumb through them anyway. But I'm old school, man. I hold them paper books in my hand. Anyway, if I thumb through those pages, I'll pick up a sentence here, a word there, maybe even a paragraph, but I certainly will not get the story. So you have to go slow enough to let the people digest where you've been before they decide, before they can come with you where you're going. And that's, and telling part of that story is if you are going to, as a babyface years and years ago, there were times that I would, I'd hit a couple of good drop kicks, and then telegraph that third one, the heel would sidestep, push my legs out of the way, and I would land, or appear to land on the back of my head, stunning me, and let the heel take over. But we established why I was, what I was missing, and established, one of the kid asked me, and I had no answer for him because it is silly. This past week, they were talking about Hulk Hogan's leg drop, and he said, when he dropped, when there was somebody under him, he landed and didn't hurt his ass. But when there was nobody under him, it hurt his ass. What's the difference? I said, I give up. What's the difference? There is none that I'm aware of. He still had to land on his ass, didn't he? So, so some things like that are illogical, but there are things in our business illogical. And if you're going to do something that really is illogical, don't do it 1,000 times and do it quickly and get away from it. It's just like the whole thing now where you see several guys wanting to hold a guy up in a suplex for a minute. Can you spell BS? Well, yes, you can. First of all, if why is the guy up in the suplex holding his legs straight up in the air? Why doesn't he just drop those legs in behind the guy trying to hold him? And he's, the minute he loses, the minute that weight shifts, the guy can't hold him there anyway. The other thing is, when you suplex me like that, I'm posting off your thigh to help you. And if you're holding me there for a minute, I am posting off that thigh to help you then too. So it's obvious that you aren't, and I don't give a damn how many pounds you can bench press it's just illogical. And one of the reasons the snap suplex was called a snap suplex, we did it quickly for that very reason. So that you couldn't tell that it was being assisted by the guy taking a bump. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
You know, and the one thing that I had at my disposal at Evolution Gym up in Elizabethan this past weekend too was the wrestling ring we were in was just on the other the same end of the building that the octagon was, and a lot of times I'd point over there and say, you know, a lot of wrestling fans watch that too, and some of the things you do make no friggin' sense, and none of those guys over there do. So if you're trying to suspend people's disbelief, if you're trying to draw them in emotionally, then you have to do something that has some logic behind it. One of the bad things is you don't see fighters turn their backs on their opponent. Once he's been knocked out, once the referee has stopped it, then he'll turn his back. But not in the middle of it? That's crazy. Plus, it's disrespectful to your opponent. It's like saying, he's so bad that I can turn my back and walk away. Try that in a street fight sometime. And when you get to the hospital, call me and let me know how it went. You know, it's just, again, logic, and that's a big part of my training, it's a big part of what I learned over the last 54 years, is there's got to be some semblance of logic if I am going to emotionally draw you in and make you buy what I'm doing.
There's a great deal more in those tweets than we had the ability to touch upon due to time constraints, but again, it's at Twitter, at Hustler2754 to follow Rip Rogers, because he shared a lot of great information for anyone who's going to be working heel or babyface, particularly if you're listening to this weekend and you've got a match tonight. Might want to be checking that out and see what's going on there that you can incorporate. Les, got a couple of questions that we have not had a chance to spend a whole lot of time on from the other day that I'd like to get to.
Sure, go right ahead.
Okay, Les, why didn't you work out west more, like in Texas, L.A., Portland, etc.? All I've ever heard Les talk about, and I love it, but is a lot of stuff about Mid-Atlantic and Knoxville and some of the other Midwestern places. How come you never went to the West Coast?
The opportunity was there sometimes, but it just didn't fit in. I went to the West Coast of Canada. I worked the Calgary Territory. I worked the East Coast of Canada, the Maritimes. I worked the Boston Territory, Kansas City Territory, Minneapolis Territory. I worked Phoenix. So that's far west, I guess, I got. Phoenix Territory, Louisiana Territory, Mobile Territory, Tampa Territory, Mid-Atlantic Territory, Knoxville Territory, Indiana, Indianapolis, Detroit, Barnett, Doyle Territory. It just never came up. You know, the opportunity was there. There was offers made. It wasn't at the right time. I know Portland was a big junior heavyweight territory. But I just, you know, never worked in for me. I could have gone to L.A., especially when Leo Garibaldi was booking there, but the territory wasn't that strong at the time. I was doing well where I was at. And logistically, let me explain, too, that, you know, when we worked different territories, we had to pack our clothes, our furniture, everything up, and move that to a new apartment and start over. So logistics came into play. Once I had established myself in Nashville Territory, Mobile Territory, Tampa, Atlanta, Charlotte, and Knoxville, if you look at a map, when I made those moves, it was an easy move. You know, I say easy, none of it was actually easy, but easier than trekking all the way across the country. Traveling, if there's one thing I hated about the wrestling business, I won't say hated, but one of the least things I liked about the wrestling business was the road, on the road all the time. You know, I would have wrestled longer than I did. My in-ring career lasted 20 years. I might have worked longer if I could have worked, you know, in the same town or within a 100-mile area, you know, all the time, but it's just that wasn't possible either. You know, so I'd had offers to work other territories that just didn't do it. Funny story about talking about Texas. One time, Dory Sr., Dory Jr., and Terry Funk were in Charlotte for the holidays. I think it was around Thanksgiving, and I picked them up. We went to a matinee movie and then to eat. And Senior had said to me, he said, Les, he said, you know, you and Terry hang out and you and Dory get along. He said, you've never come to Amarillo. How come you never came to Amarillo? And Amarillo was a good territory. It wasn't a real big territory. I said, Dory, I said, I'm a baby face, right? Yeah, and a good one, for, you know. I said, okay, you're a baby face. Dunk, that's Junior, is a baby face. Terry's a baby face. Ricky Romero is a baby face. So at best, I can come in as the fifth baby face. And so not much chance for getting above that. And he laughed. He said, I see your point. So, you know, he wasn't mad or anything, but I could have gone to Amarillo. One time, Terry and I talked about it too. It just never came up for me. You know, if something was going well in a territory, I was content. I missed Japan for that very reason. One time, when they were setting up opposition over there, when Matsuda and Duke Kiyomuka were involved, Kirby Hall and I were all supposed to go, and for some reason, that particular tour was canceled. Well, when it came around to go again, I was heavily involved in six-mans with Becker and Weaver and doing real well financially, but Roger and Dennis went because they were working more mid-card at the time. So, you know, it's just, it was more about, wasn't I didn't want to, it just, you know, didn't work out that way.
Talked about working with Becker and Weaver, which actually leads into the next question. Les, your favorite tag team opponents from the Mid-Atlantic territory back in the 70s when that territory was mainly focused on tag teams?
Oh, my gosh. There were so many good teams. There really were. Well, of course, this goes into the 60s, but made a lot of money with the Infernos. Frankie Kane, who later wrestled as a Great Mephisto, Rocky Smith, his partner under the mask, and their manager, J.C. Dykes, did a lot of business with those guys. There were so many good teams there. Furpo, Pampero Furpo, and the Missouri Mauler, the Assassins, Hawk and Hansen, Bogny and Lubitsch, the Hines brothers. God, I could, you know, I can go on and on and on. It was just, at one time, I know Wrestling Review was the big newsstand magazine of the 60s and 70s, and where they listed like the top 20 tag teams. There were times that almost half of those teams were all listed from the Charlotte office. And of course, the great babyface teams, you mentioned Becker and Weaver, but the Scott brothers were a tremendous team. Abe Jacobs and Luther Lindsay. You know, I I made a lot of money with the Infernos. I did a lot of six-mans with Becker and Weaver, and I'm trying to think of all the teams. We worked with Bogny and Lubitsch with Homer Odell as their manager. We worked with the Hines brothers with Two-Ton Harris as their manager. Of course, the Infernos with J.C. Dykes. Danny Miller, when we came in the early 70s, Miller and I worked with Dr. Ken Ramey and the medics, or the interns, or whatever the hell they were called, and it was Jim Starr and Billy Garrett. We unmasked them at a big show in Charlotte, 4th of July of 71. But there were just so many good teams. It was a learning experience and really a lot of fun to work with all those guys. I can't point, you know, except like I say, you know, my first big Coliseum main event was with the Infernos, so I guess I'd have to, you know, say that was one of my favorite teams. But tag team wrestling, that's one of the things, you know, when I do these weekend camps, devote part of one day to tag team psychology because it is a lot different. And it's a lot, tag team psychology is a lot different than what you watch on Monday nights too. It's not about me having you saying Oos and I'll say Oh, and it's not a, you know, or about wigs and bulls. But anyway, it's, you know, it was a great time there and so many great teams. My God, I'm sure I've left somebody out.
I'm going to throw in a question here before we wrap this up.
Okay.
Who was your favorite tag team partner?
God, I don't want to leave anybody. I've had some amazing partners. Of course, Kirby and Hall, we did the cousin thing, in several territories, and those guys are like family. Nelson, I used to make a joke. I prepare the World Junior Heavyweight Champions to put the belt on him. The reason I say that is Roger Kirby was the NWA World Junior Heavyweight Champion. He and I were tag team partners. Nelson Royal, who was one of the greatest ring generals ever, was my tag team, my dear friend and tag team partner, and was also one of the last important World Junior Heavyweight Champions. Danny Miller, great partner. J.J. Dillon, who everybody thinks of with the Four Horsemen as a bad guy, as a heel, was my partner. Rudy Kay, who ran the Maritimes territory. Manuel Zuma, the amazing Zuma, was my tag team partner some. A guy named Bobby Nichols, who worked predominantly in the Northwest, but came into the Carolinas for a while. In fact, he and I looked a lot alike. There was talk of us going somewhere as the Thatcher brothers and the Nichols brothers. Never. And Bobby Shane and I were partners before Bobby turned heel as baby faces. Whitey Caldwell in the Knoxville territory was an amazing partner. We did a lot of big business there. Talk about it. Now, that's not the Mid-Atlantic, but the Wright brothers, and not Orville and Wilbur, but Don and Ron. We made a lot of money with them, and in fact, our record in the amphitheater at Chilhowee Park in Knoxville, not dollar-wise, because the prices have escalated, obviously, over the years, but I think of course, I don't even know if they have wrestling there anymore, but up through the late 70s, early 80s, nobody had outdrawn us in that amphitheater, the Wrights against Whitey and I. So I was blessed there. And then there's been some less, you know, guys that I've worked with that, you know, were good workers that just, you know, as like fill-in as teams. Wahoo and I were partners a few times in Indianapolis in the earlier. This is when we were both, I'd been in the business a couple years at the time, and he was just getting started. So I've been blessed with a lot of good partners. I've been blessed to work with amazing talent through my career, and that's helped me, of course, learn a lot and absorb a lot from a lot of very talented people. And hopefully, you know, I'm able to pass that along to the next generations.
If you want to learn a lot about the psychology of the business, you won't get a better opportunity to pick the brain of Les Thatcher or an amazing crew of guys that you're going to be working with at the end of July, the first few days of August at the Mid-Atlantic Legends Fan Fest.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, it's three generations of us, you know, three generations of wrestlers. Jerry Briscoe, who is still with WWE as a scout, will be on the staff. Dr. Tom Pritchard, who was the head trainer in WWE for Lord's lifetime almost. Lance Storm, who was also received a paycheck from them as a trainer, myself, and the only one that wasn't on that staff as a trainer, but to me, one of the best damn workers of the past 15 or 20 years, Nigel McGuinness. So that Nigel, Lance, Briscoe, myself, and Dr. Tom are all the trainers at the Mid-Atlantic Fan Fest, the 10th anniversary. That's in Charlotte, July 31st through August the 3rd. And we're training all 4 days, an opportunity to work the show on Saturday night and Sunday afternoon, a chance to be seen by promoters you may have not worked with before or worked for, and to be seen by a legitimate WWE scout, Jerry Briscoe. And I think between the five of us, there must be 150 years of experience or maybe more, and all at a high level. There's nobody on that staff that has not worked main events in front of big crowds somewhere, somehow, some way. And also, what should be enticing is that there is a $2,500 Reed Flair Memorial Scholarship available to the best trainee of that 4 days, and as picked by the trainers. Now, what you, at any level, if you've been wrestling 6 months, you've been wrestling 6 years, you can still, I've been doing this 54 years, and I'm still trying to get it right. But some of the names that I'm sure already signed up are Rhett Titus, who is with Ring of Honor, Antonio Thomas, we mentioned earlier when we were talking to Doc Young, who was with the WWE for a long time, is one of the Heartbreakers. And I guess I talked to Greg Price just yesterday, who's the promoter of this whole thing. By the way, it is the last, the 10th anniversary, and the last Mid-Atlantic Fan Fest that's going to be run. So it's a great time, and so you don't want to miss that. But anyway, I was going to say Chase Owens, who I worked with this past weekend up in the Tri-Cities, is the current NWA Junior Heavyweight Champion. He has signed up to be there. So you get a chance to be in ring with some current guys who are very talented. You get to learn from some guys who have a lot of knowledge and all have been very talented. Chances to be seen by a top WWE scout. Chance to win $2,500 scholarship. The banquet is included in this. There's some, as Vic can tell you, something going on all the time. Q&A sessions, photo sessions, autograph sessions. And the, for the price of $309. Now, I talked to Price yesterday, and I think there's just a couple more spots left. And so if you're interested, you better hook them up and get it done. You can find, you can go to midatlanticnwalegends.com and sign up there, get all the information, and contact Greg.
And as we say, or prepare to say goodbye here, Les, there is one thing I feel like I should mention, because I'm not sure that you saw it, given that it took place late yesterday afternoon and there's been some updates over the course of the night. Sending our best thoughts out to Jim Ross, who's been hospitalized for the past, looks like 24 to 36 hours or so. Came home from Vegas in the Cauliflower Alley event, not feeling so good. Made the mistake, as he said, which is not a mistake, it was a great idea of his. Mentioned it to his wife, and she forced his behind to the emergency room. And he's been in the hospital ever since. He's had, according to his Twitter, his own Twitter, which he's been updating since, I guess, he's got a lot of time on his hands. A lot of medical, bumper-to-bumper medicals, two MRIs, blood drawn 4 times, echocardiogram, neck artery scan, all today, awakened every 2 hours since last night, and plus there's probably Jell-O, and who really wants to eat that? So we send our best out to Jim, and hopefully everything's going to turn up just fine with Mr. Ross.
Oh, absolutely. A dear friend, an amazing guy in this business, and love him to death. Yes, please keep him in your prayers and thoughts. And I'm going to have to shoot him an email when we get done here. Because, no, I hadn't heard that. I had not heard that. And, got my fingers crossed. Jim is a gem. Believe me, he is one of a kind. And I've so enjoyed working with him, worked under him in WWE when he's head of talent relations, shared the microphone with him in Smoky Mountain. And he's a class guy. And I hope he gets well soon.
I want to mention real quick again, if you're listening to this show, perhaps for the first time, since it is available for free this weekend as part of the free show rotation here at WrestlingObserver.com/figure4online.com. We thank you so much for taking the time to check us out. And also, please consider signing up. As Doc mentioned earlier, this is one of about 15 or 16 radio shows that you'll have access to, including Wrestling Observer Live with Brian Alvarez and Mike Sempervivi every Sunday night. And of course, Wrestling Observer Radio with the great Dave Meltzer, who puts out the Wrestling Observer newsletter. The newsletter is part of your subscription, and it's only $10.99 a month. You really can't beat the value that you get here, and we're glad that you took the opportunity to check us out. So he is the legend, Les Thatcher. My name is Victor Sosa. We're thank you so much for spending part of your weekend with us here at Doc Young's Wrestling Weekly, and we'll talk to you again next week.